All right, 32 past the hour. We'll get hooked up with Sam McCune of the World Herald here in a little bit. Another thing, and go back and listen to it. Good discussion last night with Mac on the guys from Field of 68. Not only about Kalkbrenner, one day he'll have his jersey in the rafters, which I think eventually will happen down the road. But he also talked about the portal discussion, which has kind of taken over, now that we don't have games, kind of taken over college basketball. Some new names, Michi Johnson, the leading scorer from South Carolina, went into the portal, I think, to test his NIL worth. But he spoke of how the portal is overshadowing a bit the 16 teams that are still playing. And we are set up on the men's and women's side for a great Sweet 16. But as Frankie Fiddler's in the portal,
yeah,
William Kyle III is in the portal, I look back, Hunter Salas was in the portal last year, St. Thomas was in the portal, Baylor Shireman was in the portal. All of these guys are from the state of Nebraska. And some like it, some don't. Mid-majors are hurt by the fact that you can nilly-willy transfer.
Yep.
But so can coaches. So I'm for free agency on both sides. Okay, I'm for free agency. But I'm thinking of, like, in men's and women's sports, in a state like Nebraska, we have 1.9 million people, and we've got some really good high school athletes that probably get overlooked because people look down on us. You know, I hear this more in the AAU circuit of, well, they better play AAU because I'm not evaluating them when they play in the regular season because the talent is just not very good, and I have no idea what they're playing against, but I know what they're playing against in AAU. So if they don't do well in AAU, I don't know that I'm going to jump on them. Here's the situation is of the portal and everything that has gone on. Is there a state that benefits more than the state of Nebraska when it comes to the wide open portal? Because look at Shireman. Shireman was a good athlete.
Yep.
Football, basketball. So he was good. But he was playing at Aurora.
Mm-hmm.
And people are like, So he goes to South Dakota State. Shows that, yes, I'm a really good player. And look at what has happened in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Like, I think of Mike Dom. Mike Dom was this gangly, weird guy from Kimball, Nebraska, who went to South Dakota State. And people overlooked him. You know, he came to a camp at Nebraska, and Miles was like, But at the time, he looked, he looked like a baby giraffe
out there
trying to play basketball. Now, he was good, but so, and what would have been like if Mike Dom had the free agency, like leave South Dakota State for that 1 year? I mean, he was a 3,000-point scorer in college. I think the state of Nebraska, for both boys and girls, when they move up to college, has really benefited them. Because they go to places and they prove that they can play, and then other schools are like, oh man, we made a mistake. We should have recruited you out of high school.
And those are great examples too. I've always thought about this, especially when it comes to baseball, and I'll use the examples that I was so familiar with. And you see this now with prospects. We saw this earlier. Sluggers had a thing back in the day too. And so you always had this alternative squad that, I mean, its sole purpose was for exposure. And yet I don't know if you ask any of the people who organized those groups, whether we're talking about prospects or we're talking about sluggers, that they would say they got as much out of it as they wanted to as far as getting those guys looked at for Division I programs. But it was when they would go play. The baseball thing was the JC part of it.
Yeah.
And then they get exposed in JC. Then you start to see that exposure that leads to SEC schools, Big 12 schools. So a lot of that is not right out of high school. You're going to get a few, but it's once they go. You're right. And now it's gotten a lot bigger with all of those sports, but especially basketball. Those are great examples, especially those two.
All right, we welcome in Sam McCune from the Omaha World Herald. You came in on the tail end there. The portal has been really good to Nebraska high school athletes. Yay or nay?
Yay. Absolutely. Yeah, it's been really good. I'm sure William Kyle is going to get he'll get a major college, right? Like he'll go somewhere larger than SDSU. So yeah, absolutely. Baylor Shireman. I mean, my God, it changed his life. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if Baylor's going to play in the NBA. That's such a different sport, but it's changed his life. I think he could tell you that. But going to Creighton has altered everything about his experience in college, and so yeah, absolutely. I think that's. Hunter Salas, I think, would say the same thing. Now, he went to Gonzaga out of high school, so, but he was able to go to Wake Forest and find the right school. I, I think the transfer portal, in a lot of ways, has been kinder. Even the people, basketball coaches will be like, what are you talking about? I think it's been kinder to basketball than it has been to football. And so I think there's definitely ways in which when you're recruiting kids out of high school, you can get things wrong. And yep. just and not out of anything other than we don't really know how well some of the things this kid does is going to translate to the next level. Can you imagine what Nebraska basketball would be if it was relying on the people that it recruits out of high school? Because almost all of the guys that Fred Hoiberg has recruited out of high school have left, and they barely played. So yeah. I think it's been a net positive for not only high school athletes here, but for Nebraska basketball.
Yeah. Hey, women's basketball last night got their own stage, and they delivered, whether it be in Iowa City, Los Angeles, or watching KU women wear red, which is always still bizarre to me that KU will wear red. We've got a mustard matchup. People got to see Juju Watkins. Are you for, because you are intimately familiar with women's basketball, is it still a good thing for women's basketball to have neutral sites in the first two rounds? Or not neutral sites, but on-campus sites.
It's close. I think we're right on the edge. There might be, you know, you give it a couple more years, and I think that the fans will show up. And so I think you've got to pick the right site, and you've got to pick places where the fans will come. But I think we're getting close. Now, some of this, let's just be clear, is money. You know, the NCAA puts on the tournament, and I think the NCAA's perspective is, if we're going to administer the women's tournament, we're going to do the best that we can to do X, Y, and Z with the women's tournament. Part of the way that we're going to recoup some of the money we spend is to have this thing at home sites where we know there's going to be better crowds, and you don't have to pay for one of the teams to travel. Like, one of the teams just stays there. I think the NCAA would say, no, listen, let's be realistic, and let's be realistic about the volleyball tournament too. You want the thing to make money. You want us to treat all of the teams as well as possible. Let's not go and, you know, rent out third-party arenas. So what? How many arenas would that be? How many arenas did they just play at? 8? As opposed to 16? Mm-hmm. That were all, like, sold out? So some of this is a money thing. And I know that, you know, journalism and Twitter doesn't care about that, but it's a factor. Like, you want the NCAA tournament contract to make as much money as possible. And maybe now that the TV contract has been renegotiated and they're, you know, ESPN's paying more for it, maybe they can go do it. I still wonder how many fans are going to go to an arena in Kansas City. If I was there, probably quite a few. But, you know, there might be places. See, you determine the arenas way ahead of time, 3 or 4 years ahead of time. Yeah. And when you do that, you know, you put yourself in a position of hoping that the right teams are there. And if they're not there, and I was at one of these, by the way, back in 2014, Nebraska played at UCLA. Now, UCLA didn't make the NCAA tournament that year. So the foursome was Nebraska, North Carolina State, BYU, and Fresno State. There weren't a lot of people in Pauley Pavilion, and that's the risk that you take. Because they actually did neutral sites, sort of.
Yeah.
More than a decade ago. And so we'll, I don't know. That's a key question that they're going to have to answer. But it's more complicated than, you know, sort of the moral yes or no that journalism Twitter likes to put the question through.
Sam, we have essentially put to bed the Nebraska season, if you will, or at least the game against Texas A&M. And I know a lot of people had takeaways from not only that game, but the season as well. As you look at these next couple of weeks and Fred gets more clarity on what his roster will be for them to try to sustain what they were able to accomplish and get back to the NCAA tournament, what's number one on the priority list in your opinion?
Well, they're going to have to decide, whether they want a point guard, a point guard, a guy that's going to, you know, run the offense and play elite defense out on the edge, or if they want,
Bryce Williams to keep doing that, and Jamarcus Lawrence to keep backing him up and doing it. Mm-hmm. Fred will say, well, we can have multiple ball handlers. Well, Bryce Williams ended up being the point guard, and Jamarcus Lawrence did that when he came off the bench. So the question becomes, do you want that? And then defensively, they need, an aggressive wing who can go out and make defensive plays and make plays at the rim defensively, who might be able to get, teams in trouble on the offense, kind of like William Kyle. I mean, I think that would be an interesting name to watch. He was a very good defender at South Dakota State and more than held his own against Iowa State last week. So that somebody like that. And then, of course, if you can go find more scoring, great. If that player can also play defense, great. And so I think, they're looking for good basketball players wherever they can find them. And then, of course, they need to know, and they don't know yet, who is going to be back. I don't think Rick Nass has made a decision. I think he has to explore all the options he has pro-wise. Mm-hmm. So there's that with him. And then I think, maybe they'll meet with C.J. Wilcher, or maybe they already have. What does he want to do? He has a degree. Those would be the two that I think you assess. Well, this guy's coming back, or they're not coming back. And once they know that, then they'll be able to, have a broader plan for executing who they want on their team.
Biggest position battle in football as we shift to spring football?
The most interesting one, quarterback. But
aside
from that, yeah, for sure. I am probably most interested to see, A, what happens at that receiver spot, and who sort of emerges there, whether we're coming out of spring camp and Matt Rhule is saying, I like Jamal Banks and I like Isaiah Nair and I like, Jalen Lloyd. If he says that, that would be notable. But he also might come out of spring and say, yeah, Malachi, Jalen, and Demetrius Bell. There's a lot of different answers there. I'm intrigued by that. I think they have to get better at that position. Obviously, question marks at linebacker too. I think that's an area to watch with this team. So those are probably the two that I zero in on. Those two. I think I know who the corners are going to be. I think it'll just be Malcolm Hartside and Tommy Hill. So I don't know that there's going to be a battle, quote unquote, for that. I know they like Malcolm at safety, but I don't think they're going to be able to do that unless Dwight Boodle comes way long, and playing way better than he would have been last year. So I think the corner thing settled. I think you're looking at wide receiver and linebacker.
If you are to look at this offense, when we get to the spring game, and I know we don't see anything more than the basics in the spring game, but if there is the most noticeable difference in this offense that you anticipate, that you're most confident in seeing, what part of the offense, from an improvement standpoint, are you most confident that we'll see either in the spring game or as we get here close to the fall?
This is twofold, but I think I'm most confident that the offensive line will protect a quarterback who remains in the pocket. Not a guy that unnecessarily runs around and bails the pocket, mm-hmm. but I think they'll do a pretty good job of protecting in a pocket. I thought they were getting better at that last year, and I think at times last season the sacks were a byproduct of either a guy holding on to the ball too long, probably because receivers weren't open, or in the case of Chuba late in the season, Chuba was just running out of the pocket. Anytime you do that to a lineman, so they don't have eyes in the back of their head. So the things that they're trying to do to help you can sometimes hurt you if you're running out of the pocket. So I don't think Dylan Rayl is going to be, running all over the place. He needs to just, sit there. I think Harbert's got to get better there. And I know Daniel Kalen's skill set is he does a nice job of working the pocket. He knows his limitations as a runner. And I'm not saying he's a limited runner, but he knows that he's not, Kyler Murray. So he stays in there, and they'll do a nice job of protecting the pocket if those quarterbacks stay in the box.
That is music to Danny's ears, because his senior year at Bellevue West, the kid was running for his life. They'd snap it, and he would be running all over the place. Do you think, and it's spring ball, but when you go good on good, you're going against a pretty pretty veteran defense, which Ty Robinson, by the way, looks a lot bigger than he was last year. Do you think we'll get any answers over the next month on what the running game looks like?
You know, that's a good question. I was saying this to a couple different people. I think my question mark is, can they deliver the kind of running back that they've had historically for a while? Can they deliver that player? Do they have, you know, from what, 1980 to, you know, 2014, when Amir Abdullah walked out of the building, mm-hmm. they had maybe the best running back in the country. Like, you know, before that was USC, but then USC stopped it getting those players on Marcus Allen last year. And it was kind of Nebraska. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's who Nebraska's identity was. And they need that again. It's of course about the offensive line, but it's about having a lead back in the running game. And do they have that? You know, is Dante Dalzell that? Is it somebody else? You know, like, they've got to get back to that. And for various reasons, they struggle to get that. And so I don't know that the answer to that question is it the kid they got last year who didn't play much? Is it Dowdell? Can Emmett Johnson make that leap? I don't know. You know, I think that's one of the questions. You know, Minnesota's managed to do this. Minnesota's had really, I mean.
Yeah, they have.
They haven't necessarily been great in the pros, but they've been good back.
Yeah.
And Nebraska hasn't had those guys. And, you know, P.J. Fleck had his opening press conference, which was weird. And, you know, he's like, well, I need us to rely even more on a running back. And I'm like, dude, you had like three different guys rush for 200 yards last year. But he knows what he's got. And I don't know that I'll hear Nebraska say that until they know they have those kind of players. But Fleck's also built a system at Minnesota that's like, our superstars are going to be our running backs. We're going to run the football, and our quarterbacks are going to be, you know, these older, smaller guys. That, you know, they tried the other thing last year with the athlete, and that didn't work for them. Now they're going back to some guy that, you know, played at New Hampshire who's about 5'11". And we're just going to run the ball and let this old guy throw the ball occasionally. And that's their system. And Nebraska has to get the kind of back that allows them to take a little pressure off their pass game. And I just don't know that they had a lot of pressure off their pass game.
Sam, Troy Dan being introduced today. What are you anticipating out of the introductory press conference? What he has to say and some of the things maybe that we learn from the week that Nebraska didn't have athletic director to the day that they did?
Well, I think he's already talked so many times that this won't be quite as who the heck are you?
Right.
A lot of people know who the heck he is because he talked to him in Memphis. You know, he went down to the state capitol lawn and talked to him there. And, you know, so he's already kind of made the rounds for 4 days. So he can kind of go up there and say, you know, nice things without having to, hopefully not having to push too hard and say, you know, go over the top or try to impress people because he's already made a good first impression. Mm-hmm. He did that over the last 4 days. So I think he'll probably be asked about, you know, stadium renovation. He'll probably be asked about why leave where you were. I think that question is pertinent, but it's probably most pertinent to the Washington football coach. I don't know that a lot happened in that athletic department that he had his fingerprints on before he left. You know, there'll be those questions. I think he'll probably be asked about, you know, he'll talk a lot about the success of the team and the work that they're doing. On the field and on the court, and he's got a good story to tell there, and I'm sure he'll thank Trev Alberts too. So it'll be a pretty easygoing presser, I think. I'll probably stand in the back and talk to some stakeholders and see what they think of the whole operation.
Well, that's probably where you get the best info. Sam, as always, appreciate it. We'll see you later today.
Take care.
That's Sam McCune of the World Herald. It's Sammy Mack, Mike Patterson, Stu Pospisil, all were covering the NCAA tournament. Wouldn't it be nice, because you know, I think we all want to see what the running game does with a new running back and a veteran offensive line, but it is spring. It's one of those areas that you're probably not going to get a definitive answer. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be nice to have a stretch here? When Nebraska has a running back that breaks into the top 30 all-time rushing at Nebraska, that is not a quarterback. So Divina Zigbo is 26th all-time in rushing. He hasn't been here since 18.
Yeah,
he had over 2,000 yards. I was looking at this list yesterday. Monte Cross is a top 40 all-time rusher at Nebraska.
Really?
Yeah, he's 38th.
Wow.
He only had 1,600 yards.
Yeah.
Now, the top of this list is the who's who of running backs in college football. But wouldn't it be nice to have a stretch where a running back is here long enough that is a multi-year starter, even a three-year starter, and has a good enough career that he breaks into the top 30 all-time rushing at Nebraska? And to do that, you just, Monty Anthony is 30th, and that's 2,077 yards. So if you're a starter for 3 years, and let's say you go, I don't know, 800, you are... You are in the top 20. I mean, Roger Craig is at 24-46.
Yeah.
But that would be a sign of, we got a running back here. It wasn't just a rental. And he was here for 3 years and was really, really good and leaves in the top 30 or the top 20 in rushing, because Azigbo is the last to break into that. And he hasn't been here for now 6 years.
Yeah, two things on that, too. You mentioned it. Of not being a quarterback, which would tell you that you have...
Because Adrian is... Adrian's 22nd, I think.
Yeah.
He had 2,300 yards rushing in his career.
Well, you have stability at the quarterback position with what they want to get out of their quarterback in the downfield passing game, which I think is huge for this offense. But also, you not only get the continuity, but you also get a running back that's able to stay healthy. And, I mean, you look at...
Or a guy not only that, or a guy, but also, how about the guy?
Right, right. The guy that you've identified, that's just, this goes all the way back to really the beginning of the Scott Frost era of wondering who, other than Azigbo, past Azigbo, who was going to be that guy. That was it was a constant focus point of everything we looked at in the spring. I remember when Marquis Stepp got here, then he was out. We thought, well, it could be Marquis Stepp. Then he's out because of the ankle issue. You never able... You couldn't find a rotation. Then there was Gabe Irvin looked promising. Then he gets injured. So there's all of that when it came to the injury too. But just being able to identify the guy and then having the complimentary piece. Because when you asked that question to Sam earlier, immediately thinking, okay, we hope it's Dante Dowdle. And there's enough eligibility there too where it could kind of fit that bill of what you're talking about. I'm curious, and this is where I find Emmett Johnson to be very fascinating too, of a complimentary back that when you do need some spells, you have a guy that you don't miss much, or it gives you a change of pace that's so effective for that offense. And could that be Emmett Johnson? Could the strides that he made last year suit him really well in that role to where maybe he's not the lead guy, but he will be a major impact for that offense?
All right, Tim Cougar's coming up after the top of the hour. Also, Steve Merfeld, Creighton assistant coach. We'll get his thoughts on what Pittsburgh was like, what he ate, what he drank, how he slept, how that hotel was.
All things we need to know.
Oh, and then we'll ask him about the game on Saturday night.
Yeah, Saturday night.
And also that thing that's going to happen in Detroit where Tennessee and Creighton play each other. I think behind Illinois-Iowa State, that is the most intriguing game to me of the Sweet 16 matchups.
Yep.
Illinois-Iowa State's number one. How can you not? One defense against one offense. Tennessee-Creighton is second. Houston-Duke is third on my list. So Murph will join us at 8:30. Brian Christopherson at 9. Mornings with Sharp and Hanley on 1620 The Zone.